Welcome, welcome to Black Ink Cinema Podcast, the directing duo, Joe Brewster and Michelle Stevenson. You have been shortlisted at this year's Oscars for the uplifting Black voices through documentary. I want to know everything, especially about the documentaries that have been shortlisted and a brief summary of each documentary.
Well, Going to Mars, the Nikki Giovanni Project, is a film that profiles the life and work of the Black arts movement poet, Nikki Giovanni, who is still with us today and has been very prolific over the last few decades, but is a very special type of documentary because we take a very non-traditional approach. It is what we like to call a time travel through space and earth through the mind of this seminal poet, Nikki Giovanni.
Well, Black Girls Play, there are some similarities, but it's a short documentary which examines the important contribution of games. In this case, the games that are played by Black girls worldwide, and how they contributed to almost every form of popular American culture, from jazz to gospel to rock to R&B. And that's a very exciting discovery. And I say the words discovery intentionally because their important contribution has been erased.
Yes.
And that is part of what we do at Rada Studio is prevent the erasure of these contributions, which from our point of view, allows for greater agency of women and Black women specifically.
And we try to do that. It's not just excavating the erased or the unseen, but using it in a way that challenges the form. So I think both films in their approach have a very special storytelling sort of structure and device, mm-hmm. the way we use visuals, music, editing, and sound.
So the our process is to unearth information historically, to uplift mm-hmm. character, to not shy away from difficult subject matter, but also to entertain. And the interesting thing about both films, people leave with a smile on their face and thinking, wow. And that's an accomplishment.
I'm absolutely guilty of that because after watching both of them, first of all, the knowledge and information I took from Black Girls Play, I was like, I didn't know this. And I'm like, this needs to be taught in schools. This is like information that we all need to know. I don't understand how I've lived as long as I have without knowing how imperative a childhood game that I used to play has affected the world, essentially. And since we're talking about Black Girls Play, the story of hand games, where can people watch it just before we get into dissecting the movie?
Well, currently it's available on ESPN Plus, which is a subscription platform. But I do think that the people at ESPN 30 for 30 and ESPN Films, this is under their umbrella, are really looking to see and work very rigorously on community engagement and outreach approaches where we could make this accessible to a much wider audience. You know, the film is about Black girls play on a sports channel where, you know, the vast majority of the audience are, you know, male, loving, sports loving men. but again, I think the approach with the leadership at ESPN Films, they understand the potential of the film. So I think that another way to stay up to date where the film will be screening or what is happening with the film is to go to our website as well, Rada Studio, org, and we have a newsletter that comes out that keeps people informed on where our work is being shown.
I say kudos to ESPN for attempting to expand their audience, but also expand the notion of what is sport and who gets to participate. And going into a more granular meaning of the importance of sport. You know, one of the first things we learned was that games are so important in terms of the development of children. They teach people how to socialize. And there are studies that show that the creativity of a nation is determined by the games that we play. And that's essential element of our ability to grow and prosper.
Mm-hmm. What I love seeing is the innocence of little Black girls in this documentary. As we don't get to see it often in the mainstream, I feel anyway, just like having fun, enjoying themselves and being little girls. I feel like we're often aged as Black girls. So was that something that you wanted to highlight?
Well, it's something we always highlight. But the point is that they are innocent and they are having fun despite any other the myriad of obstacles that they have to face because of race and gender. So we don't see it in the movies. Why not? And so what we like to say is it's easy for us to show it. It's easy for us to inspire people because they don't show it. It's like...
It's what we live. We live through it. In some ways, of course, an intentionality, but it's also, it's what we've experienced, you know, as people of the Black diaspora. You know, I'm originally from the Caribbean, from Haiti. And so it was just about the very natural sort of obvious for us, right? Representation and connection that we wanted to show. I think it's really the stereotype or the aging, as you've mentioned, that because it comes from a lens at times that doesn't know us, right? That doesn't know our communities, that falls into the traps. So yes, there was an intentionality, but intentionality was really about representing what we have grown up with, or we have lived with on a day-to-day basis with our cousins or aunts or uncles, you know.
Well, without this getting too intellectual, but let me just say this. The reason it's surprising is because the stereotypes which exist, and that's why I talk about archiving and unearthing history. So when you are going against stereotype, it's a shocker for people, but it shouldn't be. And so one of these days, the stereotypes will be gone. Probably not in my lifetime.
Think all the fingers crossed. I hope so. I really enjoyed it. What inspired you to tell this story? Because I know unearthing archives and finding our truth and sharing our truth, but what inspired you? Was there a particular moment, experience?
It was really through our conversations with ESPN. We had spent actually a couple of years trying to find the right story that we wanted to tell with them. Mm-hmm. And they actually approached us with this article and the book that Kira Gaunt, who is a main participant in the film, wrote. She's an ethnomusicologist, a Black woman from Maryland, who all of her work is dedicated to unearthing these connections as an ethnomusicologist. And we were just completely blown away by the book, by the story. And it was a big discovery for us. And so we were very excited to then, you know, sink our teeth into it.
Definitely. I love the correlation made between history and the use of music and communication. Like that's something that I think, I don't know, I just take for granted. And it's just something that I'm used to seeing every day. And it's something that I grew up in, whether it be at home or at school. So it was really nice to feel even part of a bigger community as well.
Well, the important part is that communication doesn't have to be verbal, and that embodied communication is quite powerful and effective at transmitting emotion, transmitting hope, transmitting what's safe and what's unsafe. And so that it's not always written in a book.
Right. And yes. In this case, it's even more significant. It's transmitting culture, you know, culture in spite of the violence and oppression and the attempt to take away, to remove culture, right? So it became this safe vessel that you cannot really take away from generation to generation.
Absolutely. And I feel like it's our superpower to kind of, in spite of everything, we still rise above it. We're still able to have joy. We're still able to love one another and do all these things and create, you know, constantly creating.
So when we're in screenings, what we found is that the audience began to recite the rhymes. And for the audience, that doesn't know the film, these are rhymes that are pretty ubiquitous. They may have started in one community, but they're worldwide. And to see how a rhyme like Miss Mary Mac, right, impacts people and is as moved around the world is pretty amazing. So whoever's in the audience, they're moving and they're smiling and they're repeating the words. But some of the ways in which this film inspires folks is the you can see in Going to Mars, the Nikki Giovanni project, which is really about words and sound and rhythm as well, but using poetry, which is kind of similar, don't you think?
Absolutely.
To the rhymes definitely. Of children.
And both of those had a lovely theme through it of just creating art and art that has influenced the world as well. I was completely unaware of a lot of the popular music that had copied a lot of these hand game songs. And, you know, the classic Nas, Uchiwali, which, you know, during high school, secondary school, that was my jam, you know. I didn't know that was based on a Jamaican game song. So it's things like that that I'm not, when I was speaking to you, Michelle, earlier, like, this needs to be in schools. This, I don't know if the next step is to approach schools to tell more of a wider music history because it's affecting popular culture, you know.
Yeah, it's affecting popular culture, but also it's that Black women's and Black young girls' contribution to it is being erased. Mm-hmm. In this case, you know, hip hop being, you know, predominantly a male space that where it is historically been difficult for women to really be represented in their full selves. This short film is even more important when we look at it that way. In sort of resetting the influence and power.
Yeah. You've got some great contributors in this. What was the process in selecting them?
Well, normally we have researchers who spend a fair amount of time finding subjects. We interview them via Zoom, not unlike this experience. And we choose people who we think would be great on camera. That means smiling, emoting, and providing the information in a way that it's accessible. So we also wanted to travel. So what we did is we found and multiple areas around the country. We traveled to Tennessee, New York. Part of this was shot in our home, but what we did is we found an amazing editor located in Mexico City, who is Venezuelan, and also had an experience with these rhymes in Venezuela. And she discovered connections that even were more international. There are there's footage from the Dominican Republic, from Liberia, from East Africa, and I believe Brazil. And so that we could, you know, demonstrate the power and the reach of this work.
I think also in terms of, we wanted to be very intentional about it being sort of intergenerational in terms of the contributions of the people we interviewed, it being centered around women's voices. We knew that Kira Gaunt, the ethnomusicologist who wrote the book, would be at the core, right, of the structure of the piece. But, you know, Marvelyn Moore, who, you know, teaches music, and conducts workshops. She lives in Knoxville and Tennessee, and she was able to connect us with these young women, middle schooler and high schoolers, who played in this schoolhouse that we found, that is a historical sort of a wooden one-room schoolhouse that we used. And seeing that intergenerational play between her experiences and them actually playing through the programs that they're involved in. And then later we have the intergenerational discussions with Elena Pinderhughes, who is who is basically a genius flutist, jazz musician, who can trace back to her training. Yeah, and Jamila Woods, was able to sort of center what it meant to belong for her, how hand games actually were devised for her to belong to her community, where in some cases she was isolated, and how she turned, you know, the work into a political statement also with one of the rhymes. So those were also very sort of intentional. So we had these contributions from women of different ages who are experts in their field.
Absolutely.
I think one of the things that we try to avoid is experts, is specifically male experts. We search for them. And luckily, they weren't available, or they didn't shine like the women who were involved in the games. And kudos to my wife for recognizing that and putting me back on track.
Love that. But how do you think we can restore the power balance? Because as we've seen, women are very instrumental and influential in hip hop, in music, but it's pretty much a man's game.
Well, I do think, I don't have the full solution, but I do know that what we are doing in terms of shining a light through narrative and through story has a very powerful impact. For me, storytelling is healing. It's validating. And I think the more people we can reach with a story like Black Girls Play, the more, you know, young girls we can, you know, we can affect, who can hopefully maybe, you know, feel not just validated, but work through life, you know, or walk through life with a sense of self that can, you know, impact the rest of the people that they are in touch with, as well as themselves. So it's first to think about healing through the stories, you know.
Well, one thing is clear. Millions of people will see this film because of ESPN. I've been in the audience And I've seen little girls spark and say, and smile and say, wow, I did that. My mom did that. My grandma did that. So when you have that kind of information, you have that understanding, you can say, step aside. I have something of value. So all we're providing is the history, and we're feeding to you this pill of history in a custard. It's called our filmmaking process.
In a yummy custard. Do you guys have any favorite hand games yourself?
I don't know, really. I mean, I think I played the most. It was probably Miss Mary Mac. I'm the most sort of used to. It's the easiest one. So, yeah.
I just wanted to point out that I grew up next door, meaning the guys would be playing while the girls would be playing next basketball or football, where the girls were you know, a few feet away doing hand games. It was something that I didn't have the expertise in, but I was intimidated by the amount of athleticism associated with these games. And so I just appreciate it now. And I wish I had taken more advantage of it. I'd probably be, you know, a better filmmaker.
No, you're great. You're great. We were talking about the mainstream, and I know Black TikTokers are constantly being robbed of their trends, but I hadn't made the connection with it being the new hand game, which I just thought like completely blew my mind. And now I can't unsee it. So, and I'm terrible as well. So I leave that to my nieces. Who made that correlation? Because I just think it was fantastic.
It was part of our research process, really, in conversations with, you know, many people, including Kira Gaunt. But I think in some ways, Elena sort of brought it home. But we were looking at, where are Black girls innovating today, right? Mm-hmm. The technology is in some ways, is a vessel, right? Is a vessel, in this case, for creativity. And we know that wherever we're innovating, because we're constantly innovating, there is also appropriation. And how does that appropriation take place? And we know that there have been battles in the TikTok space around innovations that Black girls have done, and then others have taken credit for or have gotten remuneration for. So we wanted to include that as this continuum, you know, as this next level.
I don't think that appropriation of is ever going to end. And so I have another way of looking at it. Like, if you look at the important pillars of these games, or the important pillars of what they call Afro-Atlantic, wherever we landed and where we came from, culture. So there is a call for innovation and creativity in the middle of the circle. You've seen it in jazz and hip hop, but the thing is, we are welcoming other cultures to enter the circle, and then we have to go back in the circle and innovate again. It is an opportunity for more innovation, for better music, for better oratory, for better athletics, for growth. But at the end of the day, we want to give credit where credit is due. Mm-hmm. But in economics, that's another conversation. That's a deeper conversation. Who benefits economically?
Absolutely.
What we find is, and you can see it sort of in certain cases in hip hop, right? So, you know, the hand games influence the hip hop. The hip hop appropriates, but then capitalism happens, involves, and then there's a commodification of the form. And then a stagnation in some cases of the innovation. And then new innovation happens on the underground that then you know, gets influenced again. And you see it over and over and over again. We will constantly innovate. I mean, that's part of, you know, what our humanity tells us to do in these circumstances. And so it's important to be able to honor that innovation and center it.
Yeah, absolutely. And to keep having the strength to keep going in and reinventing oneself and coming back with something new, setting new trends, you know. What is one thing you would want people to take away after watching Black Girls Play, the story of Hand Games?
I think when I watch the film, it's not what other people think. I think of my mom and how important she was in my life. Like when I was in church and she was beating that tambourine and it was polyrhythmic and I was trying so hard to understand that those rhythms, those are the rhythms of my life. And you'll see it in our editing, you'll see it in so many ways, in the way we speak. And I'm grateful that I saw that, but I didn't appreciate it at the time.
That's wonderful. Honestly, I'm very sure when everyone gets a chance to see it, they're gonna feel exactly how I did, because it is a beautiful piece of art. And then moving on to your other documentary, Going to Mars, the Nikki Giovanni Project, who is an incredible, influential poet.
I mean, Going to Mars, we like to call it this time travel through space and Earth, through a snippet of the mind of the genius mind of Nikki Giovanni and through her poetry. So we get an expansive sort of experience, an expansive experience of the impact of her work, both on a very personal and intimate level, as well as very, very powerful statements of historical, at sometimes violent moments that our communities have been through. We like to call it the anti-biopic, because we use unconventional forms of telling the story. This is not a typical profile piece. It is a piece that is intentionally told exclusively and uniquely through Nikki Giovanni's voice. There are no interviews or outside experts talking to us about her. This is her in her own voice. Of course, with our vision as directors in terms of what for us resonated as important and where we wanted to push the envelope from a narrative perspective, but through the engagement of her words and her performances.
So what Nikki Giovanni wants is to go to Mars. And she has wanted that, she has had that goal since she was 12 years old. And one of the things that she says is that Black women, based on their experience now and in history with the transatlantic slave trade, are uniquely positioned for that journey. And she spends an hour and a half in this film convincing us that Mars is the place. And we have to come to terms with her argument, but more importantly, our audience is encouraged to think of what Mars really means for them. And I found myself in tears during the first rough cut because that realization was powerful. Takes me back to my mom, right? But for Nikki, it's grandma. And so she's able to take this complex thought and translate it into relationships. And that's how we make this quasi-experimental biopic into something that's really relatable to everyone. What is your goal in life? How do you achieve that? And you see that through the many phases of Nikki's life and how that turns out for her over 80 years. I'm reluctant to tell you more because there would be
Giving it
too
away.
many spoiler alerts. But what I can say is that people have come to the theater saying, I thought this was a movie on space, but I realized it was a movie about me. We watched audiences lean in. But more importantly, this is a poet speaking. And poets usually take truth and give it to you in ways that you've never seen it. I think one scene that does that for me is when she discusses Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And she gives
Fantastic
us a
analogy.
perspective, and she gives us perspective on the relationship between Mr. Claus and Rudolph. This illuminating.
Just dropped something. Yeah, no, honestly, I thought it was a very earnest, honest, self-discovery documentary. And I felt like, as the audience, we were going on a journey with her. And usually, I think sometimes documentaries try to portray a certain image or portray themselves in a certain way, but it just felt so relatable because she was just 100% herself. And I felt inspired even more so. I was like, right. I've got to speak my mind more. I've got to do this. I've got to carve out time for myself. And just things like, her putting herself first, or putting her health first. And I just feel like, again, as women as well, it's probably something that we, oh, it's fine. I can still do it. I can march on. And just before I forget, where can people watch?
Going to Mars, the Nikki Giovanni Project, is available currently on the platform Max. It is an HBO Documentary Films original film. And those of you who again have a subscription to Max, you can reach it. You can see it there. We just recently launched on the platform, so we're very excited to draw people to it.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I think also another thing that I resonated with was how she was able to articulate how you see things as a child versus how you see how they actually are. So when she describes as we were poor but I didn't feel it or and stuff like that, you just have this like things are great. You're just with your siblings, you're having a great time, you're playing hand games, whatever it might be. And all the adult stuff, you don't really know or think about or see. But I just thought she was really was able to articulate that. How long did it take to film the documentary?
The film was a 7 year, 7 years in the making, a labor of love. That these were, obstacles that we encountered along the way, but turned them into opportunity for us. The privilege of being able to spend 7 years with Nikki Giovanni and document some parts of her life over those years really provided a number of beautiful gems for us to include in the film. But also, it allowed us to really explore layers of creativity that I think if we had were on a sh if we were on a short time frame, we might not have reached as easily, if at all, because there's a lot of layering in the film where we intentionally avoid literal exposition, and it's about the archival being in conversation with the narration, with the poetry, and with the sound and the music.
It takes you on a journey. It definitely takes you on a journey, which I appreciate. In the doc, Nikki's asked about the role of her friends or friends. What has the role of friends played in your life, Joe, Michelle?
I think friends, we're a communal society. And, you know, Nikki tries to say that she is not friendly, but she's very social. And she loves a crowd. She lives in a community where everyone knows her name. And I think friends are a superpower. And without friends and family, it is hard to survive. Absolutely. And and it's more than survive. It's to thrive and to have joy. And so that's what friends mean to me. That's why I live in the community I live in. And I think we all do the same.
Michelle, do you want to add anything for you?
No, I mean, you know, that's what fuels us, right? This idea that the healing in this storytelling process is not just individual, it is collective as well. Whether it's the people who we work with and how we engage with the material, whether it's, you know, the friendships that we develop with Nikki and her spouse, Ginny, along the way. We know that those things are, in some way, life, right? And I think we try to emphasize that in the film. I think that's part of our vision and our priority that may or may not be Nikki's, but that she definitely exudes, whether I'll reveal sort of a little bit this, the Afropunk scene for those who know that festival and her performance there, you know, show a community coming together that is intergenerational, but is also sharing a lived experience that is healing and self-reinforcing, you know, and accepting. So that's what centers us in our process. It's part of why we do what we do.
Amazing. I've always wanted to go to Afropunk. It looks like an amazing festival. Nikki Giovanni is extraordinarily inspiring, but what inspired you to tell the story?
Well, we were coming out of a 13-year exclusively observational film that we had done that actually turned the camera on ourselves and our son. Joe and I are life partners and creative partners. And the film is called American Promise. It premiered also at Sundance and won a jury prize there. But we wanted to flex our creative muscles after doing a film that was largely, you know, longitudinal but observational in nature. And we're toying with the idea of doing a profile film. And we heard Nikki on the radio in an interview while we were figuring out what our next step was going to be. And we were, again, sort of triggered by the memories of her, the impact of her poetry on us. And decided we wanted to sort of take the leap and reach out to her and see if she would be willing for us to work with her on a film about her work.
So one of the things that we like to do, you know, I'm a physician and Michelle's an attorney, and we change professions because we love art. And we thought art is political, and we're political too. But as artists, we like to play with multiple colors and multiple tools. So we've done VR, we've done AR, we've done augmented reality, we've done short form animation. And so we wanted to work and do something that was creatively different. So we decided this was going to be a combination of telling her story was going to be a combination of I'm Not Your Negro meets Kurt Cobain. And so we spent a fair amount of time trying to figure out how to do that using multiple planes of storytelling. And so we use the archival plane. We used an interview, another variation of archival, the interview with between James Baldwin and Nikki that occurred in London in 1971.
Love that interview. Yeah.
We also use her performance. You know, she's quite the performer. Comedic stand-up performer. And then we use her poetry. And we have each one of those levels talk to each other as opposed to having one level and having the other, the archival, for example, just repeat what's just been said. So that it's more compelling, it's more complex, and sometimes, and I mean by complex, some one level, instead of just repeating what she says, may say the opposite, may pose an opposite question. And so it was fun for us. And I think we've discovered a way of telling these stories, the documentary form. I said discovered, I mean we've rediscovered, that is less commercial and more entertaining.
Well, I just want to say thank you, both of you, so much for sharing your time with us, discussing these two amazing documentaries, Going to Mars, The Nikki Giovanni Project, and Black Girls Play, The Story of Hand Games. I'm sure everyone will go and enjoy them as well. But I just want to wish you guys the best of luck. And thank you so much for coming on Black Ink Cinema Podcast.
Thank you, Rachel, for having us.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.